You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUp.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
Bills Mafia, it is the Shout Buffalo Football Podcast brought to you by Tops Friendly Markets, your neighborhood store with more. And whether you're celebrating at home or away this weekend or next week or next month, Tops has all your fan favorites ready to enjoy for football entertaining or any occasion. Ryan Talbot's in the house. I am Matt Perino. And Ryan, there's a lot for Bills fans to be celebrating right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, they needed to take care of business today and get a win so they could re-enter that AFC East picture. Now next week's game, you know, the division is on the line in that matchup. The Bills can pull out a win. So Bills took care of business. That's the first thing that obviously stands out. But in terms of today's overall game, I think one player really stood out, and that was Gabriel Davis.
Yeah, and it's something that, like, going into this week, I think we talked about it on the podcast a little bit on Friday night. You wrote about it in your things to watch. This was going to be a bit of a showcase for Gabriel Davis. With Emmanuel Sanders out of the mix, what does this offense look like with him in? And I think what he brings more than anything is that reliable intermediate target for Josh. And it's not that Stephon Diggs can't be that, or even Cole Beasley or Emmanuel Sanders. I think all of those guys can be that, but you know, just having that size, I think that you see what kind of, you know, pressure and stress that puts on defenses. All week long, we talked about, you know, Gabriel Davis's impact on this Bills offense. And you saw it today. And where he continues for me to be the most impressive and the most important for this Bills team is the red zone. And that's been an area of struggle all season long. What have been the red zone issues? I think Gabriel Davis's size, reliable hands, they fix some of those problems because, you know, so much attention is placed on Stephon Diggs in the red zone. Adding another, you know, bulky option like Gabriel Davis, who has some speed, who has good hands. You saw it pay off again today. Two touchdowns. He's now up to, what is he on the season now, Ryan? Is that a five on the season? Six on the season.
Four in the last 3 weeks.
He's playing at a really high level. There's trust throughout the organization from Sean McDermott and Josh Allen all the way down to his teammates. You could see the way that, you know, guys just like, you know, rally around him, and he continues to make plays when he's called upon. And that's a big thing for a young player. We talked about this a lot on the show the other day too, about guys that Brandon Bean has drafted and how the Bills have developed those players. Gabriel Davis is another one of those day two picks day three picks that have turned into, you know, really solid gold for this Bills team. I mean, he's sitting here right now. I tweeted it. I am 100% now in the bucket where Gabriel Davis has to be wide receiver two on this team right now when Emmanuel Sanders comes back. And moving into the future next season, I think you found your wide receiver two here, Ryan.
Yeah, I think that case can be made. Listen, you kind of mentioned it. He's fast. He's big, but he's not the best route runner on this team. He's not the fastest guy on this team, but he just gets open when Josh Allen needs him to. And you mentioned in the red zone, that frame, that size, that allows him to kind of create a little bit of natural separation in terms of where Josh Allen can put the ball, because he's a little bit harder to get around, where you can kind of move an Emmanuel Sanders a little bit. And Davis has been great. You know, his role this year has been a little bit all over the board. In the beginning of the year, clear number four option behind Stephon Diggs, Emmanuel Sanders, and Cole Beasley at receiver. You throw in Dawson Knox's emergence, and he was dropping further and further down that pecking order. He's fifth on the team in targets right now, and yet six touchdowns, four in the last three games, as mentioned. 100-yard game back in week 10 against the Jets. He's taking advantage of the reps that have been given to him this year, And now with Sanders being week to week and seeing how he played today, two big touchdowns, one big catch where he had a lot of yardage after the play, he's showing those little things that he can do for this offense. And the offense is better with him out there. So you're right. The rest of this year, when even when Sanders is back, I think Sanders has to play second fiddle to Davis. Davis needs to be out there first and foremost. Red zone, he needs to become one of your top priorities, because you can win with him. You can win on those slants. You can win on some different types of balls there. But he is just that good. He has proven himself again that when Brandon Bean drafted him in the fourth round of the 2020 draft, he found himself a gem.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a guy that I think fits with his skill set, like we mentioned. And, you know, that's important. I think a lot of times, like, you listen to a lot of like some of the national guys that are, you know, have scouting histories or, you know, personnel histories. I really like to scour their podcasts. It's more so in the off season, during draft season, free agency. And a lot of the things that I think is a similar theme amongst, you know, NFL personnel people is when you're building your offense, particularly the skill position spots, it's about building almost like a basketball team in a way, right? Like you go out and you want to get your speedy guy. You want to get your, like, you know, your superstar, your do everything guy. You want to get maybe your small guy, your big guy, your physical guy. You want to try to find a little bit of a different flavor to kind of throw at teams. And I think what the Bills have in Gabriel Davis is something that, you know, none of their other guys really are like that. Diggs can do a little bit of everything. He's a unicorn in a lot of ways. You know, he fits into any kind of bucket you want to make for him. But I think getting Gabriel Davis going at this time of year, the big thing for me though with Davis is, can he stay healthy? You know, this is something that he plays a physical brand of football. He's had some toe foot issues his first two seasons. He dealt with something back in, I think it was training camp or preseason, that he was kind of, something was ailing him for a while. Might have even been at the beginning of the season. I can't remember now. But if he stays healthy, I think that he becomes a real player. I've seen some stuff out there like, why did the Bills go out and go after Emmanuel Sanders with the way that Gabriel Davis, you know, played last year and how he's been playing? You still need guys, Ryan. You're still going to need depth. And I think what Emmanuel Sanders has brought to this team, maybe even more so than the production on the field, and at times it's been really good. When Sanders has been at his best this season, he's been really good. I just think more importantly, it's what Emmanuel Sanders brings in the room, his experience. I think that that's very, very important. And I think that you continue to add talent here. They went to the well with Sanders. They've been in on him for a long time. You get him in here on a 1-year situation. It sounds like he's probably eyeing retirement more than anything else. So this is a 1-year run. You know, he's going to play, go all out in the playoffs when you get there. And it's about getting there. And the Bills are set up really nicely right now. You know, the Patriots lose yesterday to the Indianapolis Colts. It was a good game. If you go back and listen to the show on Friday, it went a lot like I thought it was going to go, minus Carson Wentz being enough for them to win. I mean, he almost did everything he could in the fourth quarter to lose that game. But we've talked about this. We're both in agreement. Carson Wentz just, you know, he's really regressed to, I think, a problematic place. When the games get harder, and teams sell out to stop the run. And listen, Michael Pittman's a good player, and you know, he got ejected in the second half, which I thought was a little bit nonsensical from a referee standpoint. I don't know if he did enough to get tossed. I don't even know if Duggar did enough to get tossed, to be honest with you. Listen, it's a physical game. Sometimes guys are going to have exchanges. I don't think we should go right to tossing guys. You could change the complexions of games, but Pittman specifically, not having him there in the fourth quarter, you could tell they missed him. But the Patriots go out. Mac Jones goes down early. They make a couple mistakes. And, you know, to his credit, he made a bit of a comeback in the second half. But a lot of that came because I think that the Indianapolis Colts went into like kind of a prevent style defense. And so you get to the end of that game. The Patriots now only one game ahead of the Bills because the Bills took care of business. It's all about controlling your own destiny. That's what the Bills have in front of them. They win out. They win their final three games. They are the AFC East champs. And it's something that I'm predicting them still, like I did on Friday, for them to do, because I just don't believe enough in the Patriots. And I think that the Bills have found some things, even with the issues that, and we're going to talk about the offensive line too in a moment, they were dealing with the last 72 hours. They found a way to come out here, have a really good game offensively against what I still think is a really good defense in Carolina, and get a win. And we saw what they did to this offense.
Yeah, listen, despite some really, you know, tough losses, last minute losses, some blowout losses and some embarrassing losses like ones to Jacksonville, the Bills still kind of control their fate when it comes to the AFC East, at least. And that's, you know, impressive. And that's really saying something with a few weeks to go. So if they go and take care of business next week at Gillette Stadium, You're back in first place in the division. You have winnable games at home against Atlanta and the Jets left. And again, we haven't seen this Bills team necessarily win back-to-back games in quite some time. But now is the time to do it. Now is the time where this Bills team needs to stack those wins to show that they can enter the playoffs on a hot streak. Just because you're starting to see Kansas City kind of pull ahead a little bit there in terms of their record, I'm not sure they're going to stumble enough, but the Bills would have the head-to-head there. So the Bills need to take care of the AFC East first and foremost more than anything else right now. And I think now there's that path. After the Colts did the Bills a favor on Saturday, the Bills took care of business today. Maybe the offensive line is back intact for this upcoming matchup. There's reason to think and hope so. And if that's the case, I think you could see a really high-powered Bills offense enter Gillette Stadium and kind of come away with an impressive win.
Yeah, I think almost everything that you wanted to have happen this week, for the most part, I mean, you probably would have liked maybe the Chargers to win. I don't know. I think the Chiefs winning is fine, too. I think at this point, you figure the Chiefs are going to win their games. You're probably not going to catch them. And so, knocking the Chargers down makes a lot of sense. You look across the board here, Ryan, even what's going on in the 4 o'clock games, Baltimore down a couple scores to Green Bay right now, Denver, down to Cincinnati. You probably want them to try to win that game if they can. But either way, Denver and Cincinnati right in that kind of pile of teams. Tennessee goes down to Pittsburgh. They're starting to tail off quite a bit. This is a situation where if you win the division, you're probably looking at, if you win out, the third or maybe even the second seed in the AFC and a chance to host a couple playoff games, you're in a really good spot. And then you go back to the place, that ended your season last year. And I think, what we're seeing right now is like, listen, we don't know what's going to happen with COVID. That's the big thing that's been happening over the last 72 to, 4 days, really, where COVID has kind of really just flipped the script here on the NFL season, the Browns game getting pushed off, the Rams game getting pushed off, things getting, the decks getting shuffled. The Bills finding out this morning that John Feliciano had tested positive for COVID this morning. Sean McDermott said he found out between 9 and 10 a.m. and they had to kind of switch things on the fly. He met with his trainer, Brandon Bean. They went through their options. They called Brian Daboll and basically let him know who he was going to have to work with. And then Spencer Brown said he didn't even find out about all the changes until the time that he walked into the locker room. So this is something that, they were already probably reeling a little bit. Now, Spencer Brown downplayed, Deion Dawkins being out. They were ready. They made their adjustments on Friday. They had a plan. He had to get his reps in. We're going to talk about Spencer Brown in a second, but they had a plan. But then you add another layer to this, and this is just going to be something that it's a good fire drill, Ryan, to have, because this is something that's not going away. This is something that could happen here over the next couple of weeks. Put Josh Allen in a bubble somehow, because, over the next 7 days, I mean, there is not a more important person in Western New York to keep safe and away from COVID than Josh Allen ahead of that game and that rematch where, I think you want to see Josh Allen potentially without the elements. I haven't looked at the weather report yet, and we know how things can get down in Boston or Foxborough for those games, but you need Josh Allen in that game and you need him at 100%. And he looked pretty good today in terms of the foot injury.
Yeah, first and foremost with the foot injury, you could tell that running Allen was not part of the game plan. They didn't want to see that get worse or have something happen where he had a setback. He ran one time. It was more of a not a designed run. It was more of a scramble with pressure coming, and he still was able to get 26 yards on that run. So he was good there. Completion percentage hovered around 55%, but he did throw 3 touchdowns in the win, which was pretty impressive considering the line play in front of him. He was under pressure and duress very early in the game, those first 2 series especially. The line did settle in at certain times, but overall, I thought Allen had a nice game considering what he had to work with that offensive line. But you're right. We've seen kind of COVID here wipe out a lot of rosters in terms of key players, important players, and it's something that you need Allen to be good to go for this upcoming game with the division on the line. So as you said, put him in a bubble, keep him away from everyone as best you can, because this is such a big game. This is, we talked about the last Patriots game as being the biggest game left of the Bills season. Well, no, this one is the biggest game left. They take care of business here. Then they determine kind of their own fate the rest of the way. So keep them healthy. Keep this Bills team healthy. Hopefully you have Dawkins and Feliciano back and you can actually get a good look at what you want this line to look like come playoff time and let them work on their chemistry the last 3 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, and this is a Carolina Panthers team that is really stingy against the pass. And that's something that I think you got to put out there right away. I know that there was some talk about maybe the Fox halftime team being pretty tough on Josh Allen over the course of halftime. I think sometimes we forget about what these teams are that, you know, the teams are going up against. 193 passing yards. You got the run game going a little bit. We'll talk about that in a little while. The Carolina Panthers hold teams to 177 yards through the air per game. The Bills are at about 193, so about that mark. But only five teams in the NFL, Ryan, have allowed less passing touchdown. We're talking about one of the elite defenses in the NFL. You look at any statistical barometer, they got two pass rushers that near or above 10 sacks this year, this week. And that's, I think, this season, that's where we can probably go from here, because Spencer Brown, I wrote about him, tough afternoon for him. And it was a crazy 72 hours. I guess we could kind of take you through what happened with him. So he gets to work on Friday. Deion Dawkins it tests positive for COVID. He finds out that it's going to be the move from right tackle to left tackle. When the season started, Spencer Brown was the swing guy. You know, Darrell Williams was still out on the right side. He struggled a little bit, and that's when he got inserted as the right tackle. But he had not played a regular season snap at left tackle. And at times today, it really did show. But he started repping right away. Usually Fridays are walkthroughs. But Spencer Brown started taking live reps, going against some of the pass rushers, Bills pass rushers in practice. He was kind of, asking them to give him different looks based on what he saw on film from Brian Burns and Hassan Reddick. So he got as many live reps as he could on Friday, gets here on Sunday morning, gets a couple more reps in, and then it's off to the races. And over the last week, he's really talked to Laura Williams, who spent a lot of time in Carolina, obviously his first few seasons in the league, familiar with Burns and not so much Reddick, but some of their pass rushers on that side of the ball, and basically got some tips. And so he took that out. He was kind of back and forth on the sideline with Williams over the course of the game, busting out there. But little things we forget sometimes, as good as Spencer Brown has played, he is such a young, raw player that hasn't even seen barely anything in this league yet. And I think that goes to what Sean McDermott said after the Jets game, where he only allowed one pressure. Slow your roll on putting him in the Hall of Fame. This is a kid that's still got to go through some development and, go through some tough times in this league. Today was one of them. Last week was one of them. He gave up five pressures against the Tampa Bay defense at right tackle, switches over to left tackle today. He was penalized five times today. Only four were upheld. Three holding penalties, and obviously that taunting penalty was the one where finally it was, Sean McDermott had enough. He pulled him out, benched him for a few plays, gave him a little bit of a talking to, and, Spencer Brown didn't mince any words. He basically said it was deserved. I put my team in jeopardy with a lot of, I was being an idiot out there, was his quote. Mm-hmm. He said he wished Sean McDermott would have taken him to the woodshed and beat him up a little bit. So this was a type of game where I think there was some frustration, amongst fans watching him play, but I think also an appreciation for Deion Dawkins and what they missed with him out of the lineup.
Yeah, you can go a lot of different ways with this. If you want to talk about the taunting penalty, I agree completely. Boneheaded play, something that wasn't necessary. Devin Singletary just had a nice run, and then you hurt your team by doing that. The holding penalties, it's almost hard to hold those against him because, as you mentioned, Matt, he doesn't have a lot of experience playing left tackle. If you go back to the college days, if you go back just at all, he is more of a natural right tackle. He's not someone that you can necessarily throw over there. And yet the Bills needed to, because of the way this offensive line was set up going into this game. They didn't want to have Tommy Doyle or Bobby Hart take on the responsibility of playing that left tackle role all four quarters. So they went to their young rookie, the guy that's flashed at times at right tackle, and said, we need you to play this position that really you don't have a lot of reps doing, especially with the Bills. So I think the holding calls were to be expected. I think the struggles were to be expected. This line as a whole had their fair share of struggles against Carolina. But you mentioned it. Carolina's defense is top in the league in a lot of areas. They were, total yards, passing yards. They were top 10 in sacks coming into this game. This was a tough test for this Bills team. And with two of your starting offensive linemen out, I find it hard to put too much fault on the holding penalties on Brown, just because of the scenario that he was thrown into, the fact that it happened so late in the week. This wasn't something like Dawkins being out on Monday and saying, okay, I have a full week of reps to get used to. You mentioned it was at the end of the week and he was kind of thrown into the fire there. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. Like I said, the taunting penalty, that was a bad one. The holding, though, I'm not shocked. It's we saw Darrell Williams. The Bills got Darrell Williams on the cheap last year before they re-signed him in this offseason because Carolina kept moving him around their offensive line. He started at four different spots, and there's one side of the line where he just wasn't good. So it's not so easy just to flip a player around, whether you're talking left guard to right guard to left guard, right tackle, left tackle, etc. And I think that Brown, for the most part, despite those holding penalties, he did enough to help the Bills win this game.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot.
Welcome. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel as well. The drive to 5,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. We appreciate you guys so much. And shout out to Tops, our loyal sponsor, from hot to go pizza and appetizers, signature fried chicken, baby back ribs and subs, delicious salads and brownie trays. Tops has everything you need to feed the hungriest fan. And speaking of feeding the hungriest fan, I went to a Christmas party yesterday, Ryan, and we do this thing every year at this family, our family Christmas party, where everybody goes out and gets gift cards. And we put them all in the middle, and then everybody kind of goes, and it's like the white alpha. Is it a white alpha game where you go numbers and you got to go and pick them up, and then you get to trade? Yep. Or no, like nasty Christmas or
there's like 20 different names for it.
Okay.
They both work.
So I ended up getting a couple different ones. Some people stole some stuff from me. My final steal was this one right here. Look at this.
Damn.
Topps $25 beauty. And guess what? It was supposed to be 20. A few people got the message wrong and they went for 25. So not only did I get the Tops, but I got $5 more than I put into the pot. So like, listen, wins all over the place. It felt good. It felt really good.
I'm glad you came away with those five extra dollars. That's good for a solid breakfast pizza there. Some Honeycrisp apples, you know, a little bit of everything. I like it, Matt. I like it a lot. Is there something else you want to talk about with that family party? Or maybe a game you lost? I saw a video of something on social media from Caitlin. I don't know.
Just so out there. First off, I noticed you just threw in the Honeycrisp because I mentioned on the show the other night that I started buying them. I'm not team Honeycrisp now. So just back all the way off of that. Number one. Number two, yeah, we had like a beer pong party or game at the party where, you know, you line up everybody at the party in two lines and then you just go one-on-one, the first one to hit one eliminates the other person. And I ended up going on my second round against my mother-in-law. And the first one, first of all, I felt it was my mother-in-law. Like, what do you want me to do here? I'm not sitting there trying to, win it at all costs. So the first one, I did a Michael Jordan. I turned to the side. I got my arm ready. I closed my eyes and I let it go. And I'll tell you this right now, Ryan, I was talking to my brother-in-law behind me. It was probably the one that was closest to going in of any I threw. And then I ended up throwing like five or six more, missed all of those ones. She won. There's a picture of her celebrating. It's a whole thing. Yeah, sometimes you got to take an L. Sometimes you got to give back this time of year, Ryan, okay?
There you go.
Speaking of giving back, the Bills defensive front gave it to the Carolina Panthers today. And listen, I thought first and foremost, the Panthers offensively were limited going into this game. Playing behind Cam Newton, who's trying to get up to speed, behind a really bad offensive line. And then, oh, by the way, during warmups, they lose their kicker, Zane Gonzalez, who strains his quad during warmups, falls down. He's got to actually be helped to the locker room. So going into the game, the Panthers basically said, we're not kicking the ball. I mean, you know, they had a wide receiver that ended up doing kickoffs, squibbing it down there. They attempted no field goals or extra points. The both touchdowns they scored, They did 2-point conversions. They got one. They failed one. And so it was a situation where there was a lot of pressure on that Carolina offense to make something happen against a defense that, you know, pretty much was gearing itself up to stop the run. Panthers ended up with 275 yards of total offense, 151 rushing, 124 through the air. Cam Newton ran it 15 times for 71 yards and a touchdown. He was pretty effective as a runner, but I think the Bills were okay with that, especially as the offense was kind of executing and making plays. And then you saw down the stretch in the second half, the defensive line really start to get cooking. This was four total sacks for the Bills, two for Effie Obada in the revenge game. And Star Lotulelei, who didn't get the start today, Harrison Phillips got the start. He had one as well. But Effie Obada, it could be a nice little, you know, he's had these games before where he's had a nice game. When we go back to the preseason, he had another one earlier this year. This could be something maybe for him to kind of build upon as the Bills look for more at the edge rusher position.
Yeah, listen, Effie Obada last year in Carolina, his sack total would have led the Bills. So we talked about there being the fact that he was still kind of scratching the surface on who he was as a player, because he comes over from the international pathway program. He's not necessarily old by NFL player standards, but he doesn't have a lot of NFL experience. So even though he's a little bit older, he's still a young NFL player in a lot of ways. So we saw him flash today. Two sacks in that one of the final drives that Carolina had, I think two on a three plays. It was the second down play that set up a really long second down. And then he obviously on fourth down, he looked like he was shot out of a cannon on both plays. And that's what the Bills have kind of been missing, that initial first move and that burst to get by the offensive lineman and get after the quarterback. And it wasn't just F.A. Obada today. You saw Jerry Hughes get in there and bat a pass on fourth down to lead to a turnover on downs. You mentioned Lotulelei with the sack. Addison missed a few sacks, but he had a few tackles for loss. Phillips had pass defense. And I thought it was a really good way to respond after Sean McDermott kind of called out the defensive line earlier this week when he said, yeah, I need more from that front four. And they showed up. They don't have a game changer in terms of getting after the quarterback, and I don't think they do this year. But at least you saw them as a collective unit do quite a bit today. And I mentioned, though, in this game, I said, you know, Carolina didn't have a kicker, and they don't have a true quarterback in this matchup, because Cam Newton is a shell of his former self right now. He is a one-trick pony. He runs the ball well, and he can hit the very simple pass plays. But when it comes to anything intermediate, deep, I have zero faith in Newton as a quarterback anymore. You saw on DJ Moore, he's wide open. That should have been six. Not only does he underthrow he underthrows the ball terribly to the point where Dane Jackson can get back underneath it and make a play. So Carolina was a little bit handcuffed in a lot of ways today. They clearly don't have any option at the QB position. And with Zane Gonzalez out, they didn't have any way to kick some field goals that maybe they were in position to do so today.
Yeah. And I think what you say there is important. It's like, we've seen this movie, you know, half dozen times this season. The Bills play well in these spots. I mean, their defense feasts on bad quarterback play and really one dimensional offenses in general. And, you know, unless somebody does something really good in the run game, you know, obviously Jonathan Taylor and the Colts. And speaking of which, if you want to talk about a team that has the inside track to be potentially a problem. And I mean, maybe this is a question that we could talk about a little bit, because like, where do you want to play the Colts if you're the Bills? Because you probably figure that some way or another, you're going to run into them in the playoffs. Where do you want to play them? Right now, you're sitting there at the Colts at 8-6. They have the tiebreaker of the Bills in several ways. Their AFC record, I believe, is better than the Bills. They have the head-to-head matchup. They have three remaining games against the Cardinals, who looked horrible today and lost to the Detroit Lions. And so really, I mean, that game does not look tough at the moment, versus the Raiders and then at the Jaguars. So right now it's looking like the Colts probably win out and sit there at 11-6 and potentially have a really good chance with two more games in the conference, even at the one seed, if the Chiefs go down. So you figure the Colts probably get that two seed if they can catch the Tennessee Titans. And I think that's possible at this point, Ryan. Absolutely. I mean, the Titans look like a team that's grasping for answers without some of their key offensive players. But here's the question I wanted to bring up. Do you want to play? And we're going to talk more about this game before we get out of here, but this is important because we're starting to look at how this field is going to come together. And I feel like out of all the teams, this includes the Patriots, I think the Colts to me present the biggest challenge. Even if you go back to last year and the Bills taking them out 27-24, I think that they know who they are almost more than any team right now in the AFC, maybe outside of the Chiefs. Although that offense really, it hadn't looked like what it's been till this last game here on Thursday against the Chargers. And they look like, okay, all of a sudden they're back. So that's a whole nother conversation. But the Colts for me, do you want to play them in Buffalo and have that home field advantage? Or are you okay with them potentially being the two seed, going on the road and playing in the dome and letting Josh Allen take his chances against their defense? And hopefully your air attack can score more points than Jonathan Taylor can on the ground.
Yeah, I'm team dome in this scenario. Go on the road and play the Colts. That is more beneficial to Josh Allen in this offense. I don't think a slippery field, that which it very well could be in Buffalo that time of year, would benefit them necessarily in terms of stopping Jonathan Taylor. I think Taylor, from his time at Wisconsin, in terms of his NFL career, he's shown that it doesn't matter in terms of the elements, he can run on just about any kind of playing surface. So I would definitely rather play on the road where I think it's more beneficial for your offense. I think they're figuring things out with this passing game with Gabriel Davis and having Dawson Knox as a difference maker. Obviously, Stephon Diggs, you should have Emmanuel Sanders back by then. Cole Beasley, who's seeing, you know, his role's kind of been minimized a little bit here too. I would take that matchup where the passing game can go out and attack the secondary versus one where they might be limited, they might be handcuffed. And again, you're going to find yourself in a situation where the Colts aren't going to hesitate to hand the ball off to Taylor early and often in Buffalo. So in that specific game, absolutely send the Bills on the road.
Yeah, it's going to be tough either way. I mean, if you look at this, how the AFC standings look right now, the Bills are the 8th seed right now. Now, that could change, especially with the division in the balance next week. But really, you know, that tells you how important not only the division is, you know, getting the division, but winning the rest of your games. If you don't somehow win the division, there's too many teams in the mix here, Ryan. So you're talking about, you know, the difference in going on the road. Like right now, let's just say for argument's sake, they were sitting in the 7th seed. That would mean a trip to New England. Then on the road against Kansas City, and then potentially a game with the Colts in the AFC title game, if that were any way you look at it from that perspective, you know, at the 7th seed or 6th seed, however that ends up working out if they don't win the division, or if they'd win the division and some of the games that they're going to have to beat, they're probably going to have to beat two really good teams to get to the Super Bowl. The most important thing is staying healthy and maybe playing the COVID game as teams kind of navigate that over the next couple of weeks.
I'm okay with the Bills being on the road this year in these playoff games. They've already beaten Kansas City on the road. I think that the dome against the Colts would be more beneficial to this team. Yes, home field advantage is great, but this is not the 90s Bills with Thurman Thomas and all this. They're more of a one-dimensional team, despite Devin Singletary, who we're about to talk about here, and his impressive performance today. So home or away, if the Bills can get in the playoffs, I think they can make a run, but I think they're almost better off in some of these scenarios going on the road.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Baltimore. If Baltimore loses, they go to 5-6, which will be a worse record than the Bills. So the Bills will shoot to the 7th seed. And
did not convert.
Wow. So the Bills fans are rejoicing.
No, they went for two in the win.
They went for two. Wow. So yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he's been so aggressive this year in every spot. And, you know, we've been complimentary of it, but this is a week 15, where you go to the Chargers game, Brandon Staley being aggressive on fourth down over and over again. I think it was 5 times they went for it. And, you know, a couple field goals here and there might have been the difference in that game. I don't think that there's any perfect recipe in this league. I think you got to play the game the way it is. I kind of like that call, even though it's gutsy there by John Harbaugh, because when you give the ball back to Aaron Rodgers in that spot, unless you're going to win the toss and you're going on and score a touchdown and end the game, there's always a chance that he's going to come down and do it. There's a few quarterbacks in this league, Tom Brady included, and that's why I would have been okay on that fourth down last week. The Bills going for it on fourth down. They didn't. Tom Brady comes back. They basically win it. So it's just what you feel most comfortable with. But, you know, I don't feel like I ever want to fault a guy for having confidence in his group and going for the win, because we've seen it work time and again, especially in a game where, you know, Baltimore probably shouldn't have even been in this game. I mean, going to the fourth quarter, I'm pretty sure they were down 2 scores.
Yeah, they absolutely were. And I get the decision in this case. It's your backup quarterback. He's played really well, but if it goes to overtime, Aaron Rodgers and that offense, you know, you have to feel like they're going to make a play on the ball. So you just want to do what's best for the team. And yep, there we go. Green Bay recovers the onside kick. So this one's going to be over. So I understood the circumstances, especially here. I get Staley saying, you know, that's who I am. That's how I want to play. And that was the way he actually beat Kansas City earlier this year. It was, they went for it on a fourth down play where they got actually backed up to a fourth and nine, and they ended up converting and winning it. So they've done it before with success against KC, and in this time, not kicking the field goals maybe cost them. But you're right, there's no one recipe, there's no one right way to do something. So I got it in this scenario. I was all for it, and it just didn't pay off for Baltimore.
Let's get into Devin Singletary here today, because I think a couple things interesting about his game. Obviously, a season high in rushing yards for Devin Singletary. He goes 22 carries for 86 yards, averages 3.9 a carry. The one 16-yard touchdown, really nice play that opened up the scoring for the Bills. After a couple of drives stalled out, it took until the second quarter to get things going. And then the offense kind of started humming. And a lot of the reason for that was the way the running game got going today. And so I think that's a good sign. Season high rushing, season high carries for Devin Singletary. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit more. 22 carries. He was the featured back. Only one carry for Matt Breida today. Josh Allen only ran it three times. And this was a game where, listen, the Carolina offense wasn't really threatening you. So it was a game where you can kind of get your run game going a little bit more. But I liked the decision to make Devin Singletary the featured back. Sean McDermott didn't want to go into plans moving forward. But I think that this is kind of the model. If things aren't going well for Devin Singletary over the course of a half, sure, flip things up, try to make an adjustment, go to Matt Breida maybe in the second half. But this is the first time Devin Singletary got more than any Buffalo Bills running back got more than 20 carries in a game since 2019, when the Bills went on the road and beat Pittsburgh to clinch the AFC East 2 years ago now. It's just too long. I think that in this league, running game is a finicky type of thing. I think a lot of it comes down to continuity, getting comfortable, and you could just see it in Devin Singletary's face. It's like we ask him these questions over and over again, and you could see, it's like, what do you want me to say, man? Like, I'm not going to like throw my team under the bus or my coach under the bus. Like, of course I want the ball more, but you know, I would imagine, I'm putting words in his mouth there, but you know, he's a guy that came out today. He looked really good. And I think this is kind of what I'd like to see them experiment with a little bit more with down the stretch, but I think it's going to be more passing next week and Josh Allen running against the Patriots. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, the one thing I'll say about Singletary is I know he had the really nice touchdown run to get the Bills on the board to start the game. I thought he had a lot of really impressive, tough runs where he faced some contact early on, or there's just no lane for him to run through. He had an offensive lineman in his way, and he then was still able to keep his legs churning and pick up 3 yards or 4 yards on a play where it looked like there was nothing. There was one where I think he picked up 8 or 9 yards on a play where he had initial contact pretty far back. And so I thought he had a lot of really quality runs today, where we haven't necessarily seen that from Buffalo's run game a lot this year, where they take on the contact, they still keep moving forward. We've seen a lot of tackles at or around the line, and I know he ended up with something like a 3.9 yard per carry average, but I came away very impressed with his overall play today. I think they finally figured out maybe giving one player the overall workload might be the way to go going forward. You can still insert Breida in certain situations, carries, pass game, et cetera. But let Singletary get into some kind of rhythm. Let him get things going. And you saw today that payoff in a pretty big way for the Bills offense.
We'll have two shows this week. We'll have we do have a Wednesday guest. I'll keep everybody on pins and needles for that. So that'll be cool. And then we'll do our preview show probably is Friday, Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve. That might be a tough one.
Ooh, doing some scheduling conversation here. And we might do, maybe we'll come at you with two straight shows. We'll do a Wednesday show and a Thursday show this week.
That might work.
I don't know.
Yeah.
If not, maybe we'll just make Wednesday one big show. We'll have the guests. We'll preview the Patriots. I mean, we don't need a lot of, content for the week to preview round two with New England. So maybe we'll do all of that on Wednesday. We will see.
Yeah. One thing I want to get into, Matt, though, is the fourth down defense of the Bills. They went into this game after the Carolina's kicker went down, knowing that they were going to have to be on the field for a lot of fourth downs. And there were 5 fourth down plays that the Panthers ran. The Bills stopped 4 of them. So I thought that they really showed up in a big way. I think it's a little bit of a challenge, in fact, when you know that, okay, this team, it's not 3 down territory, it's 4 down territory for them most of the game. Unless they're really far backed up, they're going to keep going for it. And the Bills responded. There were a lot of scenarios situations where the Panthers were in favorable situations, and the Bills came up with a big play, deflected passes, good coverage where you had Levi on the receiver. Matt Rhule after the game actually said that was supposed to be a run play. Cam Newton never should have thrown that ball. It should have been an RPO with him either handing it off or running it himself. So he seemed a little bit angry about that one. But overall, I thought the Bills defense really stepped up in a big way on those fourth down scenarios because of the spot that they were in, knowing that they'd have to go four downs rather than three today.
Yeah, and I think maybe a comment mentioned it. I thought that Vernon Butler raised his level of play today, and that was something that I think that the staff wanted to see, if in case they do need to rely on him down the stretch, somebody gets banged up. I mean, Starla Tulele has been dealing with various injuries over the course of the season. Harrison Phillips, we know his injury history, and he's always kind of one big injury away from missing some time. So that's a big development. I thought it was interesting that when Dane Jackson went out for a stinger earlier in the game, Saran Neal was the guy that they went to on the bench. I would have thought it would have been Cam Lewis. The more I thought about it, though, it made sense that they wanted to go with maybe the more sure tackler, knowing that maybe not sure tackler. I think Cam Lewis is a really good tackler, but more physical, bigger body guy with Cam Newton looking to run as much as he was in this game. And so, yeah, I think across the board, it was a game where there was a bad taste in the Bills' mouth. They came out here, I don't want to say they made a statement, because this was a game that, this was how it was supposed to look. And these are games where this is how it's supposed to look. I think most, you play this 10 times, and I don't even think the Panthers score more than 10 points. And that's why I had the prediction to be 24-10. I was getting close there in the fourth quarter, Ryan. There was a couple different plays where had the Bills got down here and had a safety or something, 24-10 on the button, it would have been perfect, but it ends up Joe B closer.
Not bad. I predicted 27-13, so I was right there too there, Mr. Perino. I was right on, almost on the cusp there with that 31-14 finish. So we were both, though. I mean, I think we were both on the money when we talked on Friday.
See, this is the thing with Ryan. What he doesn't understand is when he starts to get throwing shots out here, I can very easily just send him to timeout, and it becomes a much quieter, more inclusive, just a gentler conversation. Okay. That's the problem. So you need to have the producer screen up. See, a lot of times what Ryan does is he'll just come in as the guest, and then he has no control over what he does.
It's true.
What were you saying? I'm sorry.
I was saying we were both on the money though with our—
All right. Yeah. So I think, listen, here's the thing. It was Ryan has a lot of great predictions. Every week he comes on here, he backs it up. He's got great takes. I'm just kidding around.
No, so, but we both mentioned Gabriel Davis before the game. So, stay locked in on nyupsyracuse.com, all of our shows, because we're not going to steer you wrong, Bills Mafia, even if Matt will kick me out a few times per show.
No, that was, I don't like kicking you out. I was uncomfortable with that. I was just really bummed out because I just, I just saw you. You came into town for a couple of days. We had a real bro moment when I was dropping you off at the hotel, gave you a little Christmas present.
Yes.
Why don't you let everybody know about the Christmas present? I put a lot of thought into those. I can't believe you're not wearing it actually tonight. I'm really disappointed.
We had to do the post game pressers, and I don't think that some of those Bills players would have been impressed in my Ultimate Warrior T-shirt as much as I am. So I'm looking forward to rocking that. I got a really cool retro WWE shirt from Matt and Elf pajama pants. So I do have a pajama day coming up this week. I think it's going to clash with my Santa shirt, but I don't care. I'm going all out. I'm gonna rock both this week. So I can't wait, Matt.
That's great stuff. I put a lot of time and thought into the shopping experience for both of those gifts. I was really bummed out because I was going to get an Ultimate Warrior shirt for myself. That way we can kind of be the tag team, rock That's them right. at the same time. Maybe I'll go out and get like, I don't know. I'll find something else to go get. Maybe I'll get like a Big Papa Pump if I can find a shirt like that. That might be pretty cool.
There
Dude, I
go.
Loved back in the day. It wasn't even his wrestling. I just love when he get on the mic and be like, Big Papa Pump is your hookup. Holla if you hear me. I used to go around saying that, and I love
Scott Steiner references.
Dude, WCW Scott Steiner was a vibe that I was really feeling back in the day. Anyway, we always got digress into wrestling talk. We can't go too much in this. If you are next week, road game, day after Christmas, before Christmas, whenever, if you're hosting a large party, check out Top's huge selection of party platters for a delicious, effortless, and affordable, no-stress way to impress for complete details. Stop by their carryout cafe. Visit topsmarkets.com/fantasyfootball. Ryan Talbot, I am Matt Parrino. We will be back on Wednesday night. Like my man Rick said, we'll have one big show for you guys. We'll preview Bills versus Panthers. And then, somebody wants some Jake Paul talk. I can't get into that right now. I'll have to do a separate podcast for my fight takes at some point, Charles. Or hit me in the DMs. I'll give you all my my hot takes. All right, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. Take care. Patriots Week is here.
Shout, a Buffalo Football Podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.